Number 5411CO1, a lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 1st of November, 1954. The title of this lecture is Two-Way Communication. This tape is 60 minutes long.
I'd like to talk to you about two-way communication. This might possibly be a good moment to bring to you some small inkling of the fact that a number of centuries ago, there was a man, in a small town in Bavaria who could communicate. But since that time, there's been very little of this. And it is in an effort to bring the auditor into cognizance of this condition amongst man, and so perhaps bring at least one more man into communication and getting to communicate, that I dedicate this particular talk. Now, I don't want you to get an extreme idea about two-way communication. There have been many examples of this. I don't want you to get this idea that two-way communication is commonplace, is undertaken, is done, and so forth amongst men, because to do so would be a lie. But you, as auditors, are pretty well trained by social usage and action throughout most of your lives to believe that you are communicating with human beings. And I wish at this moment to knock that flat. It is highly improbable that you have communicated actually and accurately on a two-way basis with more than one or two people in your entire lives. Now you can tell me who these people are right now. Two-way communication has to embrace a certain amount of understanding. The fundamental parts of understanding are ARC. If you were really in two-way communication with anybody, it would be denoted solely by this fact. You right now can think, if you've ever been in two-way communication in this lifetime with anybody, you can think of somebody with some affection. Now, if there's any person right now that you can think of in your whole life with some affection, and an affectionate feeling right at this moment, you have been in two-way communication with that person. And you will note, as you remember this person, that there are a great many things that you can remember about this person, and a great many things that they have said would come rather rapidly into mind. I do not say that you have had such a person in your lifetime, necessarily, because it is not a common thing in man in this 20th century to be in good communication anyplace. But real good communication is a lot different than what you think of as communication. You follow me? Good communication is a lot different than your casual and common experience with education and communication. Lot different. So the possible high of a two-way communication may or may not have been attained by you sometime in this lifetime, but if you can think of any person you have known in this lifetime with some affection, then you are approaching a good two-way communication with that person. Now, am I putting a point across to you? Now, isn't it odd and peculiar that with such a person, you would have a considerable recall on, if you thought it over for a moment, on what they said and what you'd said to them and so forth? You'd have quite a recall, quite a lot of stuff there. When a mother has been very, very affectionate to a somewhat reluctant son, You get a communication in flow so strong that it practically occludes. This is a one-way communication. Son, very reluctant, doesn't like all this affection from women, you know, standoffish, baby talk, they kissed you, fooled around, carried you around, very affectionate, worried about you, wouldn't let you climb the backyard fence, very concerned about the time when you decided to take up the Air Force or flying or diving or something of the sort, quite concerned for your well-being. You'll get a different manifestation where you yourself felt no great affection. That's ARC, affinity, reality, and communication, of course, and where you had somebody feeling very affectionate towards you, where you didn't feel very affectionate back. The very funny part of it is the material is liable to sit there with you as thoroughly occluded, but very, very, very controlled on you. A control factor. When this sort of thing takes place, you have the individual giving us his opinion of his own past, what he's been told his own past was. Follow this. Let's take a daughter, and mother was very affectionate toward the daughter, and the daughter was rather standoffish. So maybe had a couple of other children in the family, and they sort of knocked the daughter around. There were a lot of other manifestations took place, a lot of ridges, you might say, of one kind or another. But you had mother very affectionate toward the daughter. And you had the daughter then, 20 years after childhood, telling you about her childhood. And she would say, and when I was two, so and so and so and so, and yap, yap, yap. And when I was five, yap, 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 and so and so and so and so. And when I was 10, I was so and so and so and so, and we lived there at that time. It was a very beautiful house. You know who you're talking to? You're talking to Mama. You say, now, where did you learn that was what you did it to? Because you'd think as an auditor, this is pretty good for this preclear to have a straight recall back to two. Where'd you learn about this? Well, calm lag. Oh, my mother told me. And you'd find it out that what her mother told her about when she was 10 was what she was telling you. And what her mother told you about when she was 20. That's her life. It would be enough for mother to come up. Mother to come up and tell her that she was married to another man, and she would have to have a comm lag before she could reject it. Why? Here you have this big flaw from one terminal, high affinities. Maybe Mama may have had very high reality too. And Mama certainly did communication to this child. But the other terminal was only resisting. And when you have a familial situation where the child is resisting a parent, they can only resist them just so long. They only usually resist them only the first 2 or 3, 4 years of their life. And after that, they become affinity. Same term. The basic definition of affinity is actually lost in antiquity. The word was chosen, by the way, from the ancient days of magic. The magicians, the ancient magicians, used this word consistently, continually. It actually means occupying the same space. A complete, total affinity would mean occupying the same space as. But where we have distance intervening, with spatial occupation still possible, we have perfect communication. Now, follow me on that. We have the possibility of occupying the same space, you see. But a distance intervening. We get communication. We get duplication. What is duplication? Duplication is simply cause distance effect, you see, with the same thing as effect as is cause. Well, that's duplication. Now let's take the most complete duplication there would be, which would be a perfect duplication, and we would discover then that cause and effect could occupy the same spot. And the moment they occupy the same spot, no ridge, no energy, no space, no universe. See? No energy manifestation or spatial manifestation then takes place when you get a perfect duplicate. So therefore, you could have two people standing facing each other with the possibility in either one that they could occupy the same space. See, it's statements, awareness, units. And what would we get? We'd get a very curious manifestation. They would both know what they were saying before they said it. Both know this. They'd have an instinctive understanding. They could converse with a minimum of words. One of them say, and Joe'd hand him the spanner. But these two people would make a considerable team against life. They would be very, very hard to combat. Did you ever know a pair of twins? And did you ever try to fight a pair of twins, fight one individually? You'd find yourself fighting two twins. See? When they try to talk to each other. Well, now they understand. They have very high understanding of each other and considerable affection. So much so, quite often when one twin is killed, the other one simply kicks the bucket. I mean, you get an immediate duplication on a bad situation. You never see one twin of a pair of twins that are identical twins, I'm talking about, not fraternal, who are operating very individually. One gets sick, the other one gets sick. Well, this is communication on a lower level. But if both of them felt in high affinity for each other, they would have, as a pair, much less chance of getting sick. They'd as-is everything. You know, all that was bad that was coming in, they'd talk it over and be gone. Quite in addition to that, if they themselves could maintain a fairly high communication and affinity line to their environment, you would discover that their entire environment would be improved with the fact that they were present. Two terminals are always better than one. Six are better than two. 1,000 are better than six, if they're in high affinity. Now we get into this factor in the military, and we talk about esprit de corps. If you have a unit where everybody is fighting everybody else in the unit, you'll have bad communication inside the unit. Real poor communication. You give them an order, squad's right, and they will all have a tendency to rag it up, and training might enforce, might carry them through, but if you ever put them on a parade ground in competition or something like that, gee, they'd be terrible. I mean, they just, no matter how long you drill them or train them, they would never come through. Training is no substitute for ARC, your understanding. Now, an individual could have such high ARC with his environment that he would not have to learn about any part of the environment. He would simply know all about it simply by observing it, because he could occupy it same space with no liability to himself. You see that clearly? Now, the first oddity about which I talked to you was where you have a high ARC outflow from one terminal hitting another terminal of a low ARC potential. The low ARC potential gets swamped up. It just plain ordinarily gets drowned. Now, actually, a person's mother in this case would not have to be very affectionate to accomplish this if the other terminal, the child, were way down, say. So that all we have to have here is a difference of potential to get a flow. Let's take a battery and put 10,000 volts on it, and let's take another plate or battery and put 2 volts on it. And now let's connect the two of them together. Which battery gets swamped? The 2. Volt plate, of course. Right? Life and beingness and the granting of beingness and so forth are all phrases or descriptions which simply describe this thing called communication, or an outflow of understanding, or an activity of understanding. See? We could say granting of beingness. We mean high potential ARC. See, he can grant high potential understanding, or he can flow out to, we'd say, he can also make live and make alive. Get the idea here? See, we say high ARC. We're also saying high potential of granting beingness. We're also saying high potential of granting life. We're also saying high knowingness. And we're also saying, right along with those things, saying that this individual can understand or can be understood. Well, believe me, an individual like that's liable to be understood. He's liable to be understood thoroughly to such a degree that a low potential facing him is liable to understand nothing else. You see this? Now let's take a look at life at large, and we find out that the successful life forms are simply being successful relative to other life forms. Now we have a study in relativity, and not Einsteinian relativity, but Hubbardian relativity. And that's of more use to man, I'm afraid. All due respect to Professor Albert and his umbrella, I don't quite see how he's done very much for existence, except maybe to speed it on its way. And all, I don't think anybody would have gotten real serious about the atom bomb if somebody like Einstein hadn't given it a good hard shove. You'll notice right after they built one, Einstein was one of the first boys jumping in to try to organize in order to help and save humanity, and of course he just didn't have enough on the ball. He lent his name to a couple of organizations and they flopped, and it was a sorry mess. But this was not an outflow of high life except in relationship to other mathematicians, other electricians, and other engineers. Am I right? So Einstein has a terrific outflow or potential and so forth compared to others in his field. Sister Kinney probably has so much more life potential or ability to grant beingness or ARC, an actual understanding of life and its problems, than Albert Einstein, that it's very doubtful if the two of them could converse without Mr. Einstein suddenly buying anything and everything that Sister Kinney said. Get this high-low potential. But now Einstein can't talk to a bunch of mathematicians or engineers or government political lads without them getting swamped. Get the relative factors involved here. Just taking people's name in vain. And it may be the most useful thing he ever did was to be included in this conversation. That's a hell of a funny thing to say, but let's look at it. Let's look right up to it, and let's see that right out here in Nevada, there's a quarter of a mile radius hole in the sand, which is green glass, which to this moment is radioactive. And this might be a high understanding compared to that stove. But you see, we've almost moved out of the life band. Did you ever write Mr. Einstein a letter and get an answer? No, you never did. You never will. Now, this is an interesting fact, isn't it? But here we have somebody who was exclusively making mest produce an effect upon mest. There's even medical doctors in this town who have a higher understanding potential of life than Albert Einstein. I don't mean in the field of medicine. I mean just of life at large, who can grant more beingness, who are more worthwhile to be alive. Well, life itself is happier to have them around. You see? Because they can produce an effect upon living beings, which is a good effect or an improving effect with a higher ARC. And I just said we were talking about medical doctors. I mean, let's really crawl over the threshold and slime up on the first mark on the ladder. Because these boys are not high in that particular direction. Actually, today, the minister of the gospel is right there. He isn't even vaguely starting to climb that ladder. Now, undoubtedly, around town, you could probably pick up a guy or two who could produce an optimum effect or something more optimum on the subject of life than any medical doctor in town who hasn't even studied medicine. You know, he sort of walks in and says hello or something like that and people feel better. There's undoubtedly somebody circulating like that. Maybe he's a salesman out here. Maybe it's a girl in the library, or maybe he's a plumber. We don't care what this fellow's doing. The ability to understand life and life's assignment of labels to life forms are two different things. Life assigns labels to forms, which are thereafter supposed to perform on this level. Well, the actual understanding of life, I am reminded of Mark Twain's visit to heaven. I think it was Mark Twain, and he saw this tremendous line of men standing there, and they were all lined up to get signed up or something of this sort, and they were in order of precedent. And Mark Twain said, "Who's this?" And his conducting angel said, those are the greatest generals that Earth ever had. And he says, "They are? Well, who's that fellow up there in front?" He didn't recognize Napoleon or Alexander the Great or anybody. "Oh, I've forgotten the man's name out of the book, but that's Ebenezer Smalls from Poobah, Vermont." "Well, I've never heard of this general." "You say he's the greatest general ever lived?" Yes, he was actually easily the greatest general ever lived, but he just never got around to doing any generaling. The success label assigned by life, as represented by a race or a government, is not necessarily the actually born label of the individual. You see, if you were asked to believe all the signs that you see around, that everybody's carrying on his chest one way or the other, you would get an entirely erroneous idea. But I tell you how you could get an erroneous idea corrected. You could get an idea about the value to life or actual position on the gradient scale of importance to life at large. If you get the understanding in ARC of the individual, and the understanding in ARC of the individual is a direct monitoring factor on how valuable that individual is to the remainder of life. And that's the only factor there is that's worth measuring. So we don't care if Doris Duke comes in to see you as a preclear, or whether this person is Dr. Zhao of the Zhao Clinic, or whether it's Menninger or Mayo, or the President of the United States. The label on this preclear, put there by social agreement, has nothing whatsoever to do with his value to life at large. Nothing. It has nothing to do with it at all. There is a way to measure it, and that is his understanding, his ARC potential. If you exteriorized a tremendously high potential, I mean, you're exteriorized and really swamped up, your ability to understand that at which you look, your ability to have ARC would be so high, could be made so high, that your communication would have no slightest symbol value. But you could be so high that you would not even be observed by the rest of life, and you would simply find them caving in, as far as you were concerned, and simply accepting your ideas with no critical eye of any kind whatsoever. Make race of slaves. Difference of potential? You could get yourself up to a point where it would be enough for you to think a thought, to have everybody run around and move like puppets to that thought, because you've assumed an ARC potential of such magnitude that you're just thinking toward them, caved them in. Every once in a while, somebody comes up and says, "Well, why do you talk to us wrong? Why do you put these things in words and phrases? Why do you bother to teach them in this arduous fashion?" Inferring if you were really on the ball, you see, you would just think of thought, and we'd all know it, you see. Well, if I ever were up that high and adopted this method of education or training, I'm afraid there would not be much individuality or self-determinism or life or power of any kind on the part of any auditor I trained. Now, you boys don't feel particularly reduced in your ability to get on in life through being trained by me, do you? Well, that's because I'm training across the face of your own decision and criteria and through your own experience, right? I'm not saying I simply could think a thought and then everybody walk around like puppies. That's not my inference. That's a lot of malarkey. It's a theoretical possibility, but to train in that way would be an error, wouldn't it? It would be an error. Then all of a sudden, whoever trains you might get bored and go off to Arcturus or something of the sort, and that would leave everything on a completely rabid basis. An individual cannot stand by his own inspection criteria if he can't stand alone and function alone without support. He is not worth training. It's not worth training him unless he's going to be able to stand alone and practice and utilize what he's learned. See, to train a man and take away from him at the same time his individuality would be a very horrible thing. All right, we're right here in the field of communication, and I invite you to observe the fact that we are also in the field of hypnotism. High ARC, low ARC. The potential can be sufficiently different that the low ARC potential will simply become a rabbit. See this? There's why your Freudian analyst thought it was necessary for his patient to assume the valence or personality of the analyst before he was well. What was he trying to do? One way or the other, he was trying to overpower this personality and make a socially adapted rabbit. You see that clearly? Because this is the goal of Freudian analysis. And where he couldn't get a man to do this transference, he said the man could not be helped. I would like to know how the man has been helped by having lost his individuality or personality. One of the greatest fears there has been in this universe was that some government would form with some terrifically accurate, useful therapy, which would then depersonalize and remove the individualities of the persons under the control of that government. There would be no greater tragedy, and no government would collapse faster. The duration of that government could probably be measured in two winks of the eye. People are afraid of this, but it can't happen, because any race so governed would perish, because they would be leaving up to the government the exact method by which they move the spoon full of food from the plate to their mouths, the exact number of times they masticated, and the audibility of the gulp when they swallowed it would all have to be monitored by the government if you strip them of their personality. So let this be a lesson to you as an auditor. Please don't just overwhelm your preclair. You won't ever get any place with him. You'll wonder why he stays overwhelmed for 3 days. You'll see this occasionally. 3 days they'll feel wonderful. On the fourth or fifth day, all of a sudden they collapse. Why, sure, all you did was overwhelm them. This doesn't mean hold back your ARC. It merely means establish the other guys. Two ways you can set up this two-way communication then, isn't there? You could set it up on a high-potential, low-potential terminal basis and have it simply go from the high-potential to the low-potential so overwhelmingly that then the low-potential terminal would become the high potential terminal with all of its individualities and peculiarities, right? There'd be another way you could rehabilitate this, wouldn't there? There'd be to take two terminals and make them, not by reducing one, but by increasing the low potential, you could make a two-way communication possible between these two, couldn't you? And that would be two-way communication then, wouldn't it? Comparable terminals.
This lecture is continued on side 2 of this cassette.